This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, welcome back to Behind the Video, episode number 79. And joining me, as always, is my very talented and lovely co-host, Tim Street, from the other coast, California. Tim.
Hello. What's up? Good morning. Lots going on. It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
It sure is, and I've got a lot of shopping to do. My regular shopping expedition will be taking place on Christmas Eve. So my father and I are go out for our traditional Christmas shopping at that point. So I did do a little bit of shopping on Amazon, but I've got a lot more to do. So I'm a little nervous about that. I have this there's this guy on my who has a house on my way home every day, and he's got a countdown clock to Christmas. He's got this huge holiday lighting decoration thing,
and with a countdown clock.
And it just reminds me of like, oh, now I'm in the single digits, and I'm freaking out. So we've got to get our act together here. We're hopefully going to be joined by Rick Calvert from New Media Expo in a little bit, who's going to talk to us about the whole program. We're hoping he will join us, and Tim and I will both be there in the flesh. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, if you're gonna be at New Media Expo, ping us ahead of time, you know, via Twitter, and let us know. We'd love to chat with you and find out what stuff you're up to, and maybe even have you as a guest on the show sometime.
That would be very cool. In fact, that's one of my goals, is to get a list of great guests we can bring on the show over the course of the new year. So we will look for you there. And so a little bit of breaking news, and I hate to, like, you know, because everyone's talked about this to death already, but did you hear about the tweet heard around the world, Tim?
No, do tell.
So there's a young woman who worked for a rather important company, Barry Diller's company. She was the PR person for like About.com and Vimeo and a few other sites. I think Vimeo. She apparently made a pretty nasty tweet right before she got on a plane to go to South Africa. Her name is Justine Sacco, and she basically said she's going to Africa and that she hopes she doesn't get AIDS. And then she says, just kidding, I'm white, which really is not the thing you want your PR person to be saying. And she sends this tweet, and then she gets on a plane to go to Africa, and the whole thing blows up. She's on the plane with no internet. And so by the time she lands, there's people at the airport waiting for her, taking her picture. Wouldn't you know, she got fired from her job once her employer could get in touch with her. In fact, during this whole debacle, the employer said, look, we can't reach her because she's on an international flight. So they wanted to confirm that she was the one who sent it. So apparently she was the one who sent the tweet, and she had made a few other less severe kind of comments in the past. But
how old is she?
She's probably in her 30s.
Really?
So she was the top PR person for Interactive Corp, which is Barry Diller's company. They own the Daily Beast, Vimeo, About.com, Match.com, Ask.com, and many others. She made a bit of a mistake. So the company made this statement today. We take this issue very seriously, and we have parted ways with the employee in question, so her holiday is going to last a little bit longer. There's no excuse for the hateful statements that have been made, and we condemn them unequivocally. We hope, however, that time and action and the forgiving human spirit will not result in the wholesale condemnation of an individual who we have otherwise known to be a decent person at core. So I wonder if alcohol was involved.
Isn't that the same statement that they put out about the Duck Dynasty guy for his comments?
It could very well be. I'll tell you what, we spend a lot of time, maybe I'm guilty now for even bringing up the Twitter thing here, but we spend a lot of time talking about people who say stupid things, right? But it's true.
It's really interesting. It's like you look at free speech and how it's a double-edged sword. And there has been a tremendous amount of progress in free speech and what we're allowed to do. You go back to the times of Lenny Bruce. I mean, Lenny Bruce was arrested time and time again for talking bad about the government or talking bad about the police in his comedy routines and using foul language in his comedy routines. And, now it's he opened the door for guys like George Carlin and Richard Pryor, and it really enabled a new way of thinking and a new way of free speech. But at the same time, you look back over the years, like the Dixie Chicks, when they put out statements against George W. Bush, there was a backlash for them. So there's definitely, it's great to have free speech, but you got to be smart about what you say.
Absolutely. And, what's interesting here in Connecticut, we have we are called the Constitution State because I believe we were the first state to have a constitution. And within our state constitution, there's, of course, the freedom of speech being granted and guaranteed to all of its citizens. But it also says, in addition to being a free speech state, you are also responsible for the speeches that you make. So, there's a little bit of an additional caveat that you can say whatever you want, but you're going to be responsible for the consequences of that speech. And I think that really is the lesson to be learned here. So it's a very intriguing process, but it looks like it's resolved itself. But, these things turn into like these witch hunts, and that's, who knows? It was pretty bad that she said what she said, but, track her down at the airport and take pictures of her while she got off the plane, is really pushing it. I think she was probably, drinking or something when she did it.
Who knows? Along the same lines, kind of similar in this conversation, and something dealing with free speech that's going to be brought up at New Media Expo, there's going to be a series of debates that will take place about different issues in the new media community. And in the New Media Expo video track for web television, we're going to have a debate between Heroes star David H. Lawrence, who played the creep master or the puppet master on Heroes. David H. Lawrence, the 17th, 18th, I always forget. I just know him as David Lawrence. But David is going to debate Michael Weinberg, and Michael is a Washington free speech advocate, and he'll be there debating David about, the actual debate is called Will ISPs Kill Podcasting and Web Video? So it's going to be a debate about data capping, which I think is definitely a free speech type thing, and something that I'm sure Barry Diller is paying attention to in, his workarounds. It really goes into how, you've been creating this content for years, but what if an internet service provider decided that they wanted to cut off your podcast or cut off your web video? Right now, there's no law preventing them from doing that. So they could censor your podcast. They could charge your viewers more money to deliver that podcast. There's a lot of different things they could do. So the conversation is, should there be regulations in place to allow you to have the same, reasonably fair advantage that a multinational conglomerate has in getting their messages out on the internet?
That's going to be a great topic because that actually we are moving very dangerously close to having ISPs be granted the ability to do that. This is the whole net neutrality argument where, they might decide maybe not necessarily your podcast is one they don't like, but maybe they don't like the fact that you're on Google Plus and they'd rather you use Comcast's whatever they have. And that is an issue of concern. And we're seeing here in my state, in Connecticut, AT&T just kind of backed out of the entire broadband market here in the state. They're selling off everything that has a physical wire to a home, including their UVerse service, to a smaller company that's based here in the state and has been taking over some of these less profitable marketplaces. And they are investing in doing some improvements, but Comcast has been eating everyone's lunch here as far as bandwidth is concerned. And if you want bandwidth, really, Comcast is the only game in town. And I'm really nervous that we may lose choices, and then if the net neutrality issue becomes a problem where Comcast can start deciding who transits their network, it can be very dangerous. But speaking of networks, there is a big one called YouTube, Tim. And as we, a couple of us poke around on there a little bit. And they have some charts. This is according to TubeFilter of the top YouTube channels of the week. The Turks have two positions. The first one is number 5 is Turkish Airlines. Their Kobe versus Messi video. It's like a one-on-one basketball thing, I think. 35.6 million views this week. They were doing equally well last week, too. So they certainly hit it out of the park. I don't know if I can even get to a Turkish airliner anywhere in my state, but if I ever do, maybe I'll look at them more carefully. So it's one of those examples of great marketing, but your product isn't available to most of the viewers, right?
Yeah, you know, or you know, you don't have to go through somebody else like a lot of these musicians go through Vivo.
Right, and Beyoncé is not doing that because she is number 4 with 39.2 million viewers, and I guess when you become important enough, like Beyoncé has managed to build her substantial brand there, she didn't need to give some of that revenue away, so she had 39.2 million views for her new music video. A lot of people were talking about that. Number 3, YouTube is in there at number 3 at 43.3 million views. I guess they did their like end of the year retrospective, right? So that
you know who directed that, right?
No, who directed that one?
Kai.
Wow. Kai's a rock star. Is he going to be there in Vegas?
Yeah, he's not. He's going on vacation, but Kai's on fire right now. I mean, he put together the end of the year YouTube video, which he did. I mean, you watch it as a director, as a producer, you watch that video, and then also somebody that knows the different YouTube personalities that are in that video, I'm just in awe. I am in absolute awe of what he was able to pull off, and they only had a really short amount of time to edit it as well, but months of planning paid off, and they got a lot of views from that video, and it's gorgeous. It is just absolutely gorgeous, and just a fun video to celebrate all the top videos of 2013. So if you don't have a chance, check it out. Number 2
is Muyap, our Turkish music collective. There, 44.7 million views, and I guess this is kind of like if Vivo, you know, the Turkish Vivo, except that it's probably less corporate. It's just kind of a collection of people. I'm sure they split the revenue. It's a anti-piracy activity out there. So 44.7 million views this week. I imagine a lot of that's repeat. Maybe people were playing the Muyap channel just to listen to their music. And number 1 is our friend that we don't know, PewDiePie, at 47.1 million views. During this whole content ID debate, there was a lot of people kind of complaining over the fact that they're getting hit with content ID complaints, but PewDiePie, who does what they do, is not getting any of those problems.
Don't kill the golden goose.
Right? Yeah, exactly. They'll work that one out. So I'm sure that's what they're doing.
You know what's really interesting to me about this whole thing with the content ID stuff is that it's just a mess.
It's a total mess.
It's just like it's where do you begin to sort it out? And I've heard a lot of people say, "I'm just waiting to see where the dust settles."
I think that's what
it's like. I got pinged for stock music on one of my channels, and I was about to like get into it. Like, hey, wait a second! I licensed that music. I'm allowed to use it. And then I'm like, okay, I gotta go into storage and dig out a file from 5 years ago that showed. And it's just like, for what? I'm gonna make $1, $2 on that video. As long as the video is still playing, I'm just going to put up an overlay that clicks to something else that'll monetize, you know, my thing, and don't worry about the ad revenue.
And that's
it's just not worth the time right now.
Right, and that's been my issue with it, is that, because remember I had my huge blow up a year ago, and you know, I'm thinking like, wow, there's so many people just like giving their revenue away, and I had to do what you did. I had to go back and find the license agreement from like 5 years ago. Upload that. And what was nice about it, though, is when I finally got that done, somebody, like a human being, actually replied to me from YouTube and said, "Thank you. You've proven that you have rights to this content. We will never ping you on this again." And knock on wood, ever since then, I have not had the problems that I've had before, except when I do space program stuff, and that always sets it off. I think what YouTube's decided to do is just kind of stay out of it. Let everyone, you know, we're going to create this thing. You guys work it out. The problem is there's no penalty, at least I've been able to see, there's no penalty for abuse. And as a little guy, I can't get into the system to protect my own stuff, which is driving me nuts. But But there is a Let's Play wiki now that was launched by a game developer, Lars Doucette, and this is at letsplaylist.wikia.com. And it is compiling a list of all of the game companies that are okay with you using their footage. So
nice.
So there's the community starting to respond, and that's a good thing.
Is that official, or is that just they're okay with it for now?
I think it's I think their thing is that it has to be like officially confirmed, and I would imagine it's always okay for now. So you know, at some point, somebody's gonna decide to change their mind or get bought by some other company, and you know, so it'll work for now, but later might be different. So you'll want to check that out and see what happens there. So. You know, it's not such a nice holiday for a lot of these guys, because some of them are making a living doing this. And, you know, I think back to Blip.tv. They're back before they were bought by whoever they were bought by.
Maker.
They used to say you cannot upload videos of game footage to Blip. That was like ironclad into their thing.
You know what? It's really interesting. You look at Blip versus YouTube, and also same thing with Rever. Blip and Rever were like, you're not allowed to upload copyrighted material. And that was their stance. YouTube took the other road where, hey, we're not uploading it. Somebody else is uploading it, even though we tell them not to. And if it's your content, let us know and we'll take it down. And look who won.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, YouTube's the clear winner out of the three of them.
They went for the ask for forgiveness model, and you know, yeah. One could argue that they built their initial traffic off of this copyrighted content to begin with, but you know, they were able to hide behind the DMCA, and that, you know, that was the process that allowed that to take place. So
you know,
yeah, we'll see.
I was going to say, speaking of asking for forgiveness, you expect him to ask for forgiveness, and I don't want to give this away, but there is a new Apple video that is wonderful. It's an emotional video, and there's just a fun twist to it, and you're expecting the kid in the video to apologize, but something else happens.
And it's a wonderful, I think it's probably the best holiday ad ever.
I do too.
I mean, really, they knocked this one out of the park. Their agency deserves a lot of credit for putting this thing together. And it comes, not only is it a good holiday ad, but it kind of fits this message that they've been developing over the last year of, you know, the iPhone being such a part of society kind of thing. And really just a fantastic ad. Check it out. It's been collecting 1 million views a day since it came on the air. And that's just on YouTube. It doesn't count what Apple's getting on their own channel. But really cool. And, you know, if you've ever had a teenager who's been buried in their screen, you're going to be wondering why the hell is your teenager not doing what this kid's doing with it. So
there you go.
And, you know, this screen thing, you know, the year that this started was 1989 when the Game Boy came out. Ever since then, kids have never been the same with these portable screens. So Just for Laughs and Maker launch a new channel on YouTube. I would imagine this is going to go on their Blip thing also. So I guess Just for Laughs is a comedy festival, according to TheWrap.com, and they and Maker are going to be putting together a gags channel, which is more than 3.7. They're going to take over the gags channel that the comedy thing has. So Maker's doing a lot of this, right? They're going in to help people out who, you know, have a big following but don't know how to make it work on YouTube, right?
Sure, yeah, and there's definitely value there. I mean, Maker's a machine. It'll be interesting to see how they survive this transformation that's going on at YouTube right now. The other thing that jumped out at me is that they're going to be doing a mix of pranks and walking tours. So this is interesting. From a local perspective, I mean, obviously, if you're on a walking tour, you know, you can watch it on your phone, and I'm assuming it's going to be a funny walking tour, right? And so if you're, you know, in any city and you're watching this walking tour, chances are it's a great opportunity for local advertisers to advertise. So that's creating local or global local content, because they can
very
do
clever
walking
yeah
tours in cities all around the world. And people will watch them anywhere in the world, but watching them while you're actually taking the tour or listening to it, you know, is even better. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, because there'll have to be some component of the walking tour that isn't in the video, so that you have to physically be there to get the joke or to you know, understand it.
And that tends to be more evergreen too, and especially if there's a local tie to it, it might increase the value to advertisers, because, you know, if you have evergreen content, you can milk that cow for quite a while. So
speaking of milking cows, yes. There were some movies came out this weekend.
There were, and there's a number of movies that came out this weekend. So I guess next weekend is the big weekend for movies. People go to Chinese restaurants and the movie theaters. So Saving Mr. Banks came in at number 5. Was it good?
It was good.
Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney, right?
Yeah, if you're a Disney fan, if you like the movie Mary Poppins, and it's based on a true story of what happened in getting the rights to the movie Mary Poppins, and it's just fun.
He had to work it too, right? She just didn't
hand
it out willy-nilly.
No, she did not give the milk away for free.
And there was a article in The Wrap where the director said, "We are more interested in the truth than facts." So I'm sure a little bit was embellished, but that's usually the case with these films. Number 4 was American Hustle, which has an all-star cast, and you can't have a movie. Oh yeah, and you can't have a movie without Jennifer Lawrence in it, right? So
that's right.
She's in there. 19 to 20 million bucks this weekend. What is it, like a 70s period piece of?
Yeah, it's about con artists from the 70s. Looks awesome. Definitely on my holiday list.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that one too, actually. Disney's Frozen is continuing to hang on at number 3.
I'm surprised there aren't a lot of jokes there. I'm sure they're there. I just haven't heard them. You know, the whole Walt Disney's Frozen kind of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. That's right. He is. That's the rumor, right? He's in cryogenic suspension somewhere. So. Yeah. He will be back, and maybe he'll, you know, there's a great opportunity for the re-release of Saving Mr. Banks. You can talk about what really happened. Anchorman 2 is at number 2 with $27 to $29 million this weekend. So it looks very fun, and Will Ferrell is like a tireless marketer because he was appearing on all these local news channels. Did you see that South Dakota thing where he was the anchor?
I did not, but that's awesome.
It's awesome. He's just kind of doing his thing. And thankfully, there wasn't any really serious stories there. I have a feeling they probably didn't air that. They just probably put it on their website or something. But he's been doing this all over the place. He came to Connecticut also. I don't think he did anything on the local news, but he did do something here, and I can't remember what it was. And number 1, still hanging on there, is The Hobbit. $30 million weekend, $128 million overall. So it is cleaning up. That cult following of The Hobbit is certainly helping there. And Hunger Games, by the way, came in at like number 6, so it's already getting knocked off.
Looking at this list, there's only one on here, and maybe it does have previous intellectual property attached to it, but I guess Frozen is original, but it's Disney branded, and then American Hustle. I don't know if there's a book, American Hustle, or anything like that. I mean, everything else is previous, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very true. It's just building off
or
of what they know works.
Building off previous IP.
Yeah, they just know. You know, it's one of those things where you know what works. Let's not rock the boat. And I think that's part of the issues we've been seeing with Hollywood, right? It's just a lot of re-releases.
Yeah, you can either re-release something or go steal somebody else's idea.
Right, which is what Shia LaBeouf of...
Shia LaBeouf from Transformers.
From the Transformers movie. So and this is not the first time he's done something like this, too, by the way.
Really? He stole somebody's homework when he was a kid?
He must have copied off of somebody's paper or something. But I guess he made some like short film, which was a complete ripoff of another person's comic. And I think he made the mistake of, I guess the comic was about film bloggers. So the film bloggers were the ones that you know, uncovered this thing. And he apparently finally said, "I effed up" in a tweet. Kind of apologized over Twitter about doing that. So, you know, why do people do that, Tim? I mean, you can't get away with this stuff anymore, can you?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, who's doing it? The king's not wearing any clothing. And also, you know, sometimes, believe it or not, people don't think about it. You know, I mean, George Harrison lost a lawsuit for the song, what is it, My Sweet Love? Mm-hmm. Which was somehow taken from She's So Fine.
Right.
And I think it was $100,000 at that time, which was, you know, a fairly big amount in the 70s. But it happens. I think sometimes something can be in your subconscious and you don't think about it, or you don't think to credit someone. And I think in this case with Shia LaBeouf, had he credited the person who inspired it, it wouldn't have been a problem.
Right. I mean, Quentin Tarantino does that kind of stuff all the time, right? He often makes these nods.
Yeah, in his case, it's an homage.
Right.
And Brian De Palma, same thing.
But it's always very clear, right?
Well, it's clear to him, right?
Yeah, right. I guess that's true. And, you know, I was watching, just because I was so curious about this, there was a big uproar when the Hunger Games movie came out over the fact that there was this Japanese film and book called Battle Royale, which was a very similar concept of, you know, kids being, you know, put into an island to go fight to the death or whatever. So I watched the movie came up on Netflix, so I watched it just to see what the similarities were. And Quentin Tarantino actually loves this movie, Battle Royale, because it is very Tarantino-esque in its execution.
Right.
And you know, you can see so many of these similarities that kind of, you know, that look similar between two themes between the two films. But, you know, you could say, look, The Hunger Games may have been inspired by that. The author denies it. But she took that idea and put it into a dystopian future and all this other stuff.
Right.
I mean, there's ways that you can copy without stealing. And I think that, you know, sometimes it's a bit of flattery.
You're not allowed to do another murder mystery because I did the first murder.
Exactly. Or romantic comedies. I mean, you know, I can't even watch them because they're all the same. You know,
But you know, when the first romantic comedy was done, when the second one came out, the first person said, "Hey, they're ripping us off."
Exactly. So I guess there's, yeah. You know, at first, it's plagiarism, then it becomes a genre. So
there you go.
Keep an eye on it. Hey, you know, here's another interesting story. Speaking of movies, The Wrap does this analysis every year of the Oscars, and how many? Without looking at the show notes, Tim, how many votes do you think it takes to get nominated for an Oscar?
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll? Let's see. One, two. You know, my guess would be in the thousands.
The answer is 300.
Wow.
So 300. Think about this. So there is apparently only 6,028 voters total in the Academy that make the decisions on the Oscars, both for the nominations and the award. But if you can get 300, this is why they market so heavily. If you can get 300 to nominate your film, you're in, which is the magic number. But makes you think, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, here's a great example. I was at my college had a little thing. They gave me an award, and I got to speak to a whole big group of freshmen who were there to listen to me, not because they wanted to hear me, but because their professors made them go. And, At the outset, I was talking about some of the work I've been doing with independent media, and I said, how many of you have heard of the Lizzie Bennet Diaries? And there's probably about 150 kids in the room. One person heard about it, right? But dedicated fan, like, hand shot right up. I know these guys.
Yeah.
Nobody else did. But, you know, this was back when the Oscars were formed, the Academy,
right,
you know,
right.
These opinion leaders drove everything, and now it's becoming less and less important. But here you have 6,000 people who are telling the billions that consume this content which films are the best. How much longer does that happen for when we get into something where every niche can find its preferred content, right?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to watch this unravel in so many different ways. You know, I was at a party and I was talking to this guy, and he worked at a studio, and he was head of publicity for awards. Like, he didn't market to the public, he didn't mm-hmm. market to the industry, except anybody that would be voting for awards. So he was in charge of both publicity and marketing, so that he would work on the strategy for what are the films going to be that are the most marketable that we can get out there. What are the ads going to be? What are the press releases going to be? What is the publicity tour going to be? And a lot of people don't realize that what they also do when they pick only like two or three films. Each studio picks two or three films, and they go, these are the films we're going to push and support for Oscars. And then what they do is they schedule screenings of those films with Q&A of the cast and the directors. So they're trying to get the Academy
some access
members
there, right?
Like, they're trying to get them to come to that screening and make them feel a part of the film and make them have warm and fuzzies so that they vote for that film.
And
there's a huge strategy behind it.
And who are the Academy voters? Are they other actors and actresses, directors, or
yeah,
all the above?
Yeah, they're people that have been invited into the Academy by Academy members for their body of work. So it's not just something that you can go apply to. You know, you're invited in. If you, you know, get nominated, you're pretty much, you know, getting in. And then they vote on the different things that they are a part of. So like if you're, you know, a hair and makeup person, you vote for hair and makeup. But I think everybody's allowed to vote for Best Picture.
Very interesting. Well, I was fascinated by that article in the Wrap. So if you're interested in the voting process, check it out. It doesn't look like Rick's going to make it to the show here. So maybe
we'll try to get him on again. Maybe next week. I mean,
yeah,
see if we can get him on before New Media Expo.
Let's do that because
he's a busy guy. He's got a very busy guy.
This is a very big. I mean, this is like an all-year thing to plan this, right? I mean, this is not an easy. He's going to get about 1,000 people to show up, and right?
Yeah, I think it's more than that. We'll get the details from him. It's not just him alone. He's got a partner, Dave. So, you know, maybe we'll get Rick. Maybe we'll get Dave. We'll get one of them on there.
So, Tim, what's happening this week? Anything exciting to talk about?
I think there's Christmas going on this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Everything else is kind of shut down. So, go see some movies. You know, it's a really good time to promote your podcast because people are getting new iPhones. They're getting new iPads, and they're going to look for free content. So if you can do anything to promote your content so that when folks open up their new presents and maybe they'll discover your content.
Get that stuff up and get it up quick, especially all your videos and all that stuff too, exactly, because people are going to be consuming a lot on Christmas afternoon once they get settled in with their new goodies. So, well, that, I think, Tim, will wrap up the show for this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at One Tim Street.
And you can find me at Lon Seidman, LonSeidman on Twitter. I'm going to be starting up a new domain, lon.tv, after the first of the year. So that's where you can find all my YouTube stuff. Actually, if you go to it now, it'll take you right there. So I'm going to be working on that. And beyond that, I'm getting ready for Las Vegas and hope to see Tim there. And I'm actually hoping to get outside this time because I think I went outside like all of like 25 minutes at the last one.
You
don't get out much, but it's a really valuable experience in New Media Expo. So that will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.